TED Audio Collective.
Hi, I'm Debbie Millman. Canva is great for designing visual content for work, no matter what industry or department you work in. Nail your next presentation with Canva Presentations. Start with a professionally designed template and use it as a springboard for your design. It's a serious time saver. Time to present but can't be there in person? Enter Canva Talking Presentations. Record yourself presenting and add your talking head to your slides so your audience can watch your perfected presentation anywhere, anytime. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Design Matters with Debbie Millman from DesignObserver.com. On this program, Debbie Millman talks with Jake and Poom Lefebure about how they got their firm Design Army up and running, about work versus family life, and about the importance of sketching in their design process.
You need to dream alone. You can't dream as a group.
If the sketch is looking good as a sketch, execution's going to look good as well.
Here's Debbie Millman.
Designers make stuff. Armies blow stuff up. So to call your firm Design Army is eyebrow-raising and attention-grabbing. A potential client might worry about Design Army eating them out of house and home and trampling the garden. But fear not. The Washington, D.C.-based agency is a graphic design firm run by husband and wife team Jake and Poom Lefebure. Their clients include Adobe, PBS, and Congressional Quarterly, and they are here to talk about what they do and how they do it, at home and at work. Welcome to Design Matters, Jake and Poom.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks, Deb.
So you two met right out of college in the late 1990s when you were both working at the same DC design shop. Was it love at first sight?
It was more of the intern Washington scandal romance.
Really? Tell me everything.
Yeah.
I need to know all the details.
Well, I mean, basically, you know, we started actually at our job a day apart from each other. She was the intern and I was the designer. And when we first saw each other, it definitely wasn't like love at first sight because we were both scared, you know, out of our wits because we just started this new job. So, we worked a lot together. That was back in the day whenever, you know, we didn't have fabulous fast new Macs and everything. So it took like, you know, 20 minutes to move a pixel in Photoshop. So you had a lot of time to kill.
In between pixels.
Yeah. In between pixels, basically. And I don't know. She finished up her internship and went back to school and finished up. And when she finished at Radford, the firm asked her to come back, and she came back full time, and that's when we really started to hang out a little bit more. And it pretty much started off, we were riding the train together, working late together. You know, pretty soon I was like, hey, your building has nice laundry facilities.
So wait a second. So you started going out with Poom because her place had laundry facilities?
Kinda, yeah.
No, look how beautiful she is. Are you crazy?
Well, you know, of course there was happy hours and you know, drunken parties and that kind of stuff that kind of pitched in on the romance level, I suppose.
Okay, but now you're blushing, and so we're getting it. Yeah. All right,
but it really wasn't laundry. I mean, they had great laundry, and it was cheaper than my building, so I was going over there doing laundry.
Good to know.
And she had a swimming pool at her building.
So you fell in love with your wife because of the amenities in her living situation.
Yes. Of course, she couldn't cook, so I had to cook everything. So, but then we started grocery shopping together, and before you know it, we were shacked up living together, and all the time, nobody at the office knew.
Really?
No, nobody
knew. They couldn't sense it. They couldn't feel it.
Not really, because
you know, I'm such a city girl and he's such a country boy. I don't know. People just don't.
Didn't think.
Yeah. No? They were just like, there's no way that could ever happen.
But, really?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. But we never, you know, it's definitely don't ask, don't tell kind of a thing.
So when'd you come out?
I forget how we actually...
I think we came to New York trip once.
We came to a trip to New York, and then people started like, they, you know...
Poom and Jake are hanging out a lot
together. A couple people started to put together then, and then we made it official that we were going to get married, and so they had a big engagement party for us and all that kind of stuff.
So, Poom, you just said that you're a city girl. I read, actually, that you're a self-described city girl who grew up in the heart of Bangkok.
Yep.
So what got you to Washington?
I came here as a foreign exchange student, and I was going to be here in only a year in high school. And then I got art scholarship to go to a school in Virginia, Radford University. And, you know, I asked my parents, you know, can I stay? You know, I got partial scholarship. You know, it's going to be 4-year college. And they say, yeah, you know, go ahead and stay. So I stayed there for 4 years. And my fourth year, I had internship at Supon Design Group in D.C., and that's where I met Jake. And that's, you know, after my internship, I went back and finished the semester, and they hired me back.
And so you were both working there during the dot-com bubble. What was that like?
The dot-com bubble and the dot-gom bubble.
No, actually, I feel like I graduated. We were pretty lucky because we graduated at very good timing. You know, that's 1996, 97. I mean, that's economy was amazing. Like, yeah. You have a lot of job offers, you know, unlike what's going on today. So I feel lucky that we actually graduate at the right time, you know, have a couple year experience before everything blow up.
It was definitely a roller coaster during that time. But I think we learned a lot on the business side, at least I did personally, on what works, what doesn't work. And when we were first at our jobs together, it was a very small studio. And then it grew really big. And so the bigger it grew, the more it was easier to fly under the radar. So that's why we keep our firm small. You know, we can kind of keep track of everyone.
From what I understand, a lot of the tenants that you employ in the firm that you have now that you share together comes from a lot of the learning of what not to do as you saw the downward spiral of the firm that you were working at.
Yeah.
So you left Supon together to start your own business in 2003.
Yeah, more or less so, yeah.
What's the more, what's the less?
Well, I mean, basically, Supon had sold the company and then it was purchased by this MHI Holdings, which, you know, everything was defunct now. Supon's still around. He's still a good friend of ours and everything. But he had checked out and they basically were saying, you know, here's this portion of the company to run. But at the same time, you know, we're laying off people and the company's basically going downhill with nobody hitting the brakes. And it just got to the point where we were like, okay, now's the time just to do it for ourselves. Let's give it a whirl. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, we'll go get a job somewhere else.
And were you worried? Were you fearful? I mean, had you had savings? What gave you this confidence? But you did start it around the kitchen table. Is that not correct?
Yeah, we started at the kitchen table.
So talk about those beginnings.
I wouldn't say it was scary because when we left our jobs, the clients we liked, we told them where we were going. And the ones we didn't like, we never told them we left. So, you know, we were able to have a few clients come along with us, but we were really adamant about not focusing on our old past. Like, at that point, we were like, if we're going to do Design Army, we're going to do it the way that we envision it, and we're not bringing any baggage with it. So we really kind of started on a fresh slate, really trying to find our clients. And so at the beginning, we would take any kind of project we could lay our hands on, and we'd work like crazy to make it the best that we absolutely can make it. And we still do that today, although we can be a little more selective with the clients that we take. Back then, it was like somebody's like, hey, you know, conference for shoes. Oh, sure, we're down with it, you know. It really didn't matter at that point because we needed to have a body of work that had voice.
How did you come up with the name Design Army?
Lefebvre Mekarunryung.
that's her maiden name.
That's a horrible
so
name.
So put those together and add communications to the
end. You could be Design Attic. You could have been Design Storm. No, Army?
We want to sound big, you know, even though we start with two people and, you know, well-trained, well-organized, know what you're doing.
We wanted something that could be easy to remember as well.
And, you know, for me, I'm from Thailand. Something that easy to spell for international market, it's really important too. Something that my parents can pronounce. You know, army, very easy. And that's what we went with. Yeah. Simple.
Yeah, we get a lot of clients that call and be like, so do you design for the government?
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, really? All the time.
Yeah. I'm like, do I get any discounts?
Oh, wow. That's like, interesting. Sure. Well, I guess also the fact that you're in Washington.
Yeah.
Now, is it true that you found your first client after you put out flyers inviting people to a yard sale?
Yeah.
So tell us about that. How did that happen? How does one get clients from putting out a flyer about a yard sale?
Well, luck.
I think part of it is luck, but we made some pretty hot yard sale flyers back in the day.
What was on it?
It was made out of old wallpaper that we had.
You gave out actual pieces of wallpaper?
Well, we post around
we
town.
We post them on town on like chunks of wallpaper, basically.
Okay.
So we put them into like the grocery stores and on poles and everything. But yeah, our first, I guess, real clients came into our yard sale and he had a flyer and he's like, this is the best yard sale flyer I ever had, except he had a lot more descriptors in there.
and he was a former Clinton administration politico, right?
Yeah. And they're still great friends of ours, Scott and Yandor Consulting, and they opened a lot of doors. And when Poom was like, you know, these people don't have any money and this and that, and I was like, you know what? I was like, this guy, listen to him. You can hear him a block away. And he's like a human Rolodex. I'm like, it'll open up a lot of doors.
So what was the project?
We did a graphic branding for their company. Yeah, they were launching a new PR consulting company, and they didn't want to look DC. So we come up with this huge icon library of things that go together, want to be together, because the name was Scott plus Yandora. So we could play with this whole icon system, and they
and
still use it.
And then when they hand out, you know, the business card, people ask them who designed your card.
Yeah,
and that's our rep right there.
Yep. So you said that he didn't want to look D.C. What is the D.C. look? Eagles and...
I wouldn't say eagles, but definitely a lot of burgundy, very conservative grays. Yeah. You know, and I think there's still a lot of PR marketing consultants, especially in the political side, that still fall into that sort of, you know, old staid kind of look. But their colors were like lime green and silver. I mean, that was very, very different.
It's dated now, but...
Yeah, it's very... Yeah, I wouldn't say it's dated, but... We wouldn't pick that today, although our architect clients like that color.
So you started this firm together. Neither one of you had any other job that you were doing on the side. You obviously needed to have health insurance. How did you get your financial foundation to even begin this journey?
You saved
beforehand.
Yeah.
We lived in a crappy apartment. We were paying... I think $800 a month. And this is when we were working at Supon. So when we were working there, we were, you know, making decent money. So we were able to put it away.
So you always knew that you wanted to do this? Or you shortly after?
No, I think we tried to save for our wedding.
We were saving
Thailand
for our wedding.
First. And I was like, Jake, you have $20 allowance. But wait.
Yeah. I had $20 allowance for lunch. So I'd spend 10 on beer and 10 to eat.
So Poom was the financial director here.
Yes. Yeah.
And so you originally were saving for a wedding, and then you ended up taking that and putting it into your business?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we had the wedding in Thailand, which, you know, if we would have had the wedding in the U.S., it would have been, you know, 10 times the amount. So we had some left over.
But you know, when you have wedding in Thailand, people don't give gifts. They give money.
So the wedding kind of ended up paying for itself. So we came back and we were like, okay, so what's next? And we were like, well, let's buy a house. So we ended up buying a house. And we were still working at Supon. So this was probably like, we got married in 2001. So between 2001 and 2003, we were really socking away our money, savings. And it just got to the point where we were like, okay, it's time to cut it loose. And I stayed on as a consultant for, I don't know, another 2 months or something like that, really kind of getting things rolling. And Poom had taken a job just to be the safety net in case, you know, stuff wasn't pulling together. But it was really about two months in, and I was like, I can't do this on my own, and I can't expect her to come home from working full-time job and stay up to 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning with me. So I was like, I got to hire someone. It's either going to be you or somebody else. So she quit, and we just hit the ground running. And I would say probably about 3-4 months after that, we started adding our first designers.
And so you've been financially solvent since the beginning. I was reading, there was an article online that I found that was all about how you structured your financial foundation. And even in the first 6 months of your business, you had, I don't know if it was grossed or had netted, but the number 180,000 was there. And I thought, well, that's not bad for a company that's starting all on its own, two people and getting everything going. That's not bad. How did you, aside from the flyer and the wallpaper and the ex-Clinton Politico, how did you go about getting your business?
It sounds kind of crazy, but it's just doing good work. I mean, we really focused on our work. Business is always there, and it's a big part of making the living. But if you worry too much about the business or worry about too much of other people's business, you kind of lose focus. And we really said we need to focus on creativity and really finding best solutions for our clients. And if we do that, that's going to be our best marketing. We don't have account reps. We don't have sales.
We did a lot of invitation work
in DC,
and that means, you know, when you send a, like, let's say if we do stuff for the Washington Ballet, invitation design, 4,000 go to CEO or, you know, very high up people in DC area, and we ask the client, can we put a design credit on the piece? You know, very, very tiny type, created by Design Army, and we get 2-3 clients out of that because they, you know, they thought we provide something that's not wearable in DC.
So if your work wasn't the kind of typical work that was coming out of DC, how would you describe your style? How would you describe the kind of work that you do? For my listeners, just so that you know what's happening right now, they're looking at each other to see who wants to say what.
Well, one thing that you'll find out if you don't, haven't already, we don't agree on anything, really.
Really?
We don't agree on things very often.
Oh, let's hear more about that.
Well, we just don't. We just think we think differently. We argue a lot, but it's usually over pretty quick.
Well, then I'm going to ask you each to describe your style, and let's see what happens. I'm going to ask Poom to go first.
Sure. I think we'll agree most of it.
I think simple. It's very minimal what we do. And, you know, design for me should please the eyes and stimulate the mind. So, you know, it doesn't have to be different layers. Sometimes just be one word on a page. A copy can be the best illustrations. You know, we always just kind of subtract things down and just find that one idea to communicate on the page.
Yeah, it's very fundamental. I mean, sketch is a big part of our work process. You know, we don't just hop onto the computer and have at it. I guess that's kind of our therapeutic strategy session, is really sketching out all the ideas and filtering through them to make sure that they are valid and that they're really going to work for the solution that we're trying to achieve for the client. But, you know, one of the other things that we do is, you know, that's what we show our clients too. We don't just sketch it, then execute it and show them. We usually just sketch it and be like, let's just show them this.
So I want to talk about that because, Poom, I read that you said that you believe that if you can't sketch, you can't see in your head. And I thought that was a really profound thing to say. Why do you feel that it's important to be able to sketch beyond what you can see in your head or can't see in your head? And also, why do you feel that it's important to show clients those sketches before doing any work on the computer?
Every design firm have different method. For me, as a designer, you kind of have to think on your own. You know, our team, when we brief a project, everyone's go to their desk or go home and sketch on their own. Like, you need to dream alone. You know, you can't dream as a group. And then, you know, what you go dream the day before, you come back and then we have a meeting. So that's why, you know, the idea of sketching is like how you see things in your head, how you dream about things, how you see the project going to come to life, whether it's right or wrong. It doesn't matter because we, you know, all we do is sketching. And I think it's just more of, you know, you get your idea down very, very quickly. I mean, the sketch doesn't have to be drawing necessary. Sometimes sketch can be a list of words. Sketch can be combination of both. You know, there's different kind of sketch. So it's not like when we say sketch, it's mean drawing. For me, it's like sketch from your brain to your hand. You know, it's this chemistry in your body that's how we get the idea down.
The sketches that I've seen that you've done are quite beautiful. They're not particularly fancy and they're not particularly detailed, but they are very precious and very beautiful. Do you keep all the sketches for all the work that you do?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
I have a folder. One day we'll have a Design Army sketchbook.
Yeah, you absolutely have to. But, they're really profoundly wonderful.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me on the business side, I guess, since I'm doing more of that these days, the sketches are great because I can get the client to buy into the idea and become part of that collaborative process with it, as opposed to going and showing them finally, you know, detailed out designs and polished, and they're just like kind of nitpicking things apart. But when you go in with a sketch and you get them involved in the process and in the project, they start to add to it. You leave a little bit of room for them to kind of evolve with it.
I love that.
And it's, you know, it's pretty easy sell. And I'd say 95% of the time, if the sketch is looking good as a sketch, execution's going to look good as well.
And, you know, sometimes the client gets so hung up on the way things look. For example, you know, we do a lot of fashion editorial. If I pull, let's say, a stock photo or something to get a look and feel and they don't like a blonde, then that's concept, it's over. Where a sketch would be, there's a female, a kid, and that's it. And, you know, we can cast later. And just so the clients really focus on idea, you know, what we're trying to say, what we're trying to communicate, not so much about execution in the very beginning stage. You know, a lot of people ask us, you know, how do you even present sketch to the client? And, you know, I think Jake's very good at selling the idea to the client. And if the client willing to listen to you and be part of the process and concept, I think the end product is just much better.
Jake, you mentioned before that you're doing more of the selling now. Did you always have more delineated responsibilities in the organization, or is it something now that's developing as you grow?
No. I mean, even when we started off, we knew we couldn't have like two creative directors because we'd kill each other. We're on a project together. Well, we drive each other insane.
Why? Why is that?
Just because, you know, we both have our design idea and our own egos.
Strong opinions.
And, you know, I always lose. I almost always lose. So I just got tired of losing. And I just said, all right, you know, you do that and I'll focus on
because
this.
Because, I want, like, do a print piece and then I want the die cut for a stamp, 7 colors. And he's thinking about, okay, that's too much money. And I was like, well, let's just do it. You know, it's always come down to, you know, the business side. That's what we're usually fighting about because I always want to go overboard and he's trying to pull me.
Right. We're a very hands-on studio as well. Like I said, you know, we don't have the supporting cast that you would typically see at an agency. I mean, everybody is creative.
We don't have AE.
No AEs, no CSRs, no project managers. Everybody takes ownership of their project. And, you know, Poom Wax is creative director. I end up acting as, like, production coordinator a lot. And, you know, that's where she drives me crazy, you know, because we'll have a print budget set. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, I want to change the size. And I want to put this on it. And I want to, you know, heat stamp foil wax something. And I'm less like... All right. I don't know how the hell we're going to do it, but we'll sell it to the client one way or the other.
Do you ever regret it afterward?
No, it always,
yeah,
she's, it always
exactly.
Looks good. It's always right. But, you know, it's hard to go back to the clients. You know, once they've already set a budget and asked for more money, it can be a difficult kind of thing to do. They'll be like, why does it need it?
Well, how do you get them to do it?
Then we show how much it look, you know, compare it. This is without die cut. This is without die cut, and let them form their opinion.
And usually we're doing it for a very particular reason. Like, it has purpose. It's just not to make something shiny.
So what would be the strategic reason to do a die cut versus not? I think that would help our listeners to really be able to understand how you get somebody to do that.
I guess it depends on what the die cut purpose is. We did a book for a law firm that had a square die cut the whole way through the book. So it was a 64-page book and had a square die cut through the whole thing. And the title of the book was, a hole in a book or a window of opportunity? And that was the title of the book.
Okay.
You know, so if we were just going to do a picture of the window on the cover, that's kind of lame.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, we do a lot of crazy stuff, especially like we've been doing a lot of work with Nina Paper. And now, oh man, we're like foil, laser, die cut, you name it, you know, if it can be done to paper, we're doing it. And it's great, but it's also, you know, it's always done with a purpose. Like, we're just not doing it to waste money.
I want to come back to some of the Nina work in a moment, sure, because some of the latest work that you've done is just mind-blowing. But so you're a 10-person firm or an 11-person firm, about that?
It hovers, yeah. I think right now we got 8 designers and then me and Poom. So full house would be a staff of 9.
And so you also mentioned at the beginning that you told the clients that you liked that you were starting your own agency, and the ones that you didn't like, you didn't tell them anything.
Correct.
And I also read that you do turn down a fair amount of work.
Yes.
So what is the kind of client that you like? What is the kind of client that you don't want to work with? Talk about some of the decisions that you have to make.
Well, we did some healthcare work early on, and it just wasn't creatively rewarding. And our work model has always been that we want to change the kind of creative landscape of Washington. So if we're just off doing all the conference work or all of this sort of thing, you know, we just really, you know, we're never going to get anywhere. And our work model is also that, you know, the way we get our projects is by doing great creative. So we have to be very selective on what projects we bring in. And if I meet a client and I don't think it's going to be right fit, we don't take the project. Or, you know, if they call and the first thing they want to know is how much something costs, we usually don't take the project. Or we don't respond to the RFP. You know, if an RFP comes in and I say, well, you know, how many other firms have you asked to bid? And they'll say, well, you know, 6. I'm like, you know, I don't want to be part of the fishing trip. So, you know, we weed off
a lot of things. That takes a lot of courage.
It does. But at the same time, you know, if I just bring in a bunch of crappy work for the staff will leave.
Right. And, you know, I love what I do because I only do what I love. So you have to be very engaging on the, you know, product and project that you take in. And that's the benefit of being a small studio, because, you know, you can take so much work. So you can pick and choose what you want to really do.
Right. When you have a staff of 9, you know, it's not like you got staff 30 to,
yeah,
you know,
but you still have 9 paychecks you have to sign
every couple of weeks,
right?
Well, we have a 2-bucket model. We have the bucket of fun and we have the bucket of stuff that, you know, pays the bills. Mm. And every shop, I think, has that bucket model. They might call it something differently.
Yeah, but James Victoria calls it the God jobs. Okay. Those are the fun jobs.
Yeah. So, you know, we fill up the money bucket as fast as we can at the beginning of the year. And once we're to that point, I don't have any reservations saying no to people, because if it's not going to be fun, then why do it?
Now, you mentioned healthcare. Why? What's wrong with doing
the
projects
damn doctors,
for healthcare?
Yeah, the doctors would always get involved, and they take it home to their wives and be like, "What do you think?" And she's like, "Well, I don't know. I don't like blue." And
maybe our design sensibility doesn't speak to that market either. You know, whatever we present seems not to hit the mark. So we know our weakness, or this is not appropriate. And it's like, you know, I don't want to waste my time nor waste the client time. You know, there's other people who can do it better than us, and our time, you know, much better, you know, serve other client in luxury market or fashion or entertainment.
But we definitely look out for projects that are going to be challenging. You know, a project that we'll look at and be like, you know, this is probably going to be kind of difficult, but it'll be a good learning process, and it'll be something that's going to, you know, educate us a little bit about a new business sector, a new business industry, because we were very, very diverse with our client base. You know, we don't just do the fashion. We just don't do, you know, we're going from Disney to law firms. I mean, we're going completely across the spectrum with our clients. So,
like, we never done art direction or a lot of photography on our previous job at all.
No,
and
never.
We just, when we started designing, I always wanted to get into photography and art direction. And you just learn it. You're just so naive because you want to do it and you started. And now it just, we do a lot of that.
Yeah. You do the first shoot and you're like, wow, this is great. And then we look back and we're like, holy crap, we did that.
Well, what's so interesting is that I think a lot of the work that you're doing is bucking a real trend, in that I think you said that 75% is print-based?
Yeah, we're about 75% print-based still. You know, our web projects tend to be, I wouldn't call them boutiqued or anything like that. I mean, we definitely do some large-scale sites, but we seek out more creative-based sites, you know, whether it's for a hotel or a fashion client, or we'll do, we do a lot of website for architecture firms. So, you know, architects are definitely a bit of a challenge because they're almost like us, except they use bigger words. You know, they have a tendency to want to put everything they've ever done in their careers on their websites.
And, isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Justification.
Yes. It's like, you know, it's like I can put it out there. But, you know, after we meet with them, you know, we tell them, you know, you don't have to do it. The website's a handshake. It's not punch me in the face. You know, you got to let it kind of showcase what you want to do in terms of the clients that you want to be working and bringing in. You know, a website's just not to put everything I've ever done in my life up. It takes a little while to get them to understand that, but eventually they do, and, you know, they end up with great, great work.
I started to see your work change when you did the Wonderland commemorative book for the Washington Ballet. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I've seen this thread through your work of very magical, a lot of storytelling with imagery. Talk about how this style of yours has developed, because I think it's really interesting and I think it's really unique.
Yeah. I mean, we basically did this project for the ballet. They were one of our first clients. We didn't have staff yet. It was just Poom and Jake. And the ballet took a risk on hiring us to do their season brochure. And so after we did that, they were like, okay, we're totally down with these guys. And we've been doing their stuff since, I think, 2004. We've been doing a lot of their work for them. And so we were at a gala, and the artistic director was there. And he's like, yeah, it's going to be my 10-year anniversary and this and that. You know, we're all drunk. And I was like, we should do something really great. And he's like, yeah, it sounds like a great idea. And I was like, no. I was like, we got to do something really, really good. He's like, okay. So I was like, we're all drunk. He's not going to remember any of this. And about a week later, he called and he's like, hey, do you still want to do that project? And I was like, sure. I was like, we'll come in. Let's talk about it. And so we went in and we started talking about it. And I think they had an idea of like a 20-page thing or a calendar or something. And we're like, you know, if we're going to do something, let's just do it right. Let's do it big. Let's showcase Washington. Let's showcase the dancers. And so we said, let's make a commemorative book. And let's take your 10 favorite performances from the past 10 years and photo shoot them throughout Washington. He said, okay. He's like, who's going to pay for it? I was like, let's worry about it later. I said, let's get it down on paper. Let's get it thought out and processed and make sure that it's even something that we can do from an execution standpoint before we even worry about who's paying for what. I was like, you know, we're going to pitch in and do most of this, so let's just see where it goes. And so we started the concept phase, and we got a list of his 10 favorite performances. We came back with, you know, different ideas of how we would want to photo shoot each performance.
And in Washington.
In Washington, yeah. And highlighting different locations and different aspects of the city that I guess people see, but they really don't notice every day. So we were in some pretty obscure locations, some old warehouses and the Arboretum. Of course, we were on Pennsylvania Avenue because he had a few iconic places.
Sure.
And it all started to come together. But at the same time, we were still like, what the hell are we going to do for words? What are we going to do to tie all this together? And we just kept playing with this concept of Wonderland originally, of kind of like this dream world. We just lifted all the copy from Alice in Wonderland.
Well, it's a very modern interpretation.
Yeah.
And typographically, it's absolutely gorgeous. The photography is just, Cade Martin did the photography.
Yeah, he shoots a lot with us. Yeah.
It's just a magnificent piece. It's a piece of art.
It took us over a year, it was something like about 14 something months to finish that project.
And, you know, like people was like, why would you do it? That's pro bono. That's so much work. And, you know.
That was my next question.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just feel like you have to do something. You know, when you think of DC, you don't think of art or design or whatever. And we really, really want to change the perception of the city. And that's why we thought, you know, a shot, iconic shot of Pennsylvania Avenue with ballerina in a row walking across will tell that story that, hey, you know, DC is new. Something is happening in DC. And that picture has become very iconic for our city. You know, people always say, oh, I have an idea to do this, an idea to do this, but never execute it. I think the idea is never an idea unless you execute it.
Mm.
You have to execute it. Otherwise, it's just going to be one of those like million idea that flying around. It's easy to say, I have an idea, but can you make it happen?
Yeah, a lot of people
and we did make it happen.
Oh, I've thought of that before.
Yeah.
You know, that was my idea. Well,
so, yeah.
You got to do it.
I think some of the beauty of your work is that they're not ideas that people think about a lot, but then you do make these things happen. And I felt the same way when I saw the Nina paperwork, the most recent Nina paperwork mm-hmm. that's just come out. I feel like that work might not have happened had you not done Wonderland. So it's sort of an interesting trajectory in the way your business and the work that you're doing in your agency is evolving.
Yeah, I think our first really crazy photo shoot was we do the Ringling Brothers Circus, the program books. And once we got that project, we had to go to Florida to do a photo shoot. And that was the first and last time Poom went to Florida to do the circus. But if you can photo direct, art direct elephants and crap like that, you can do anything. And after we did those shoots, we come back and we're like, you know what? We can just do anything. We should not be afraid to try this. And so the Wonderland, you know, we did some earlier, smaller fashion things and we kind of built up. And then, but the Wonderland was definitely one of the ones where it was kind of like major production and, you know.
It was a real breakthrough, I think, in terms of where your work has gone.
Absolutely. I think it's a breakthrough. You know, we, after that project, we have a new category in our website under Art Direction. And Design Ivy now, it's almost like known for that kind of work, you know. A lot of people transfer from print to new media, but we are transferred from print to photo art direction. You know, I feel like we have created our own kind of design firm, which doesn't really fit anyone more. And, you know, I think that's what makes us a little bit different than a lot of traditional graphic design firm.
Well, I love the idea of doing a piece for a paper company that also comes alive in the behind-the-scenes video that showcases how you came up with the ideas and how you executed them. One of the images from the Nina paperwork that you have just done, I cannot get out of my mind. And, you know, with paperwork, I think it's really hard to do work for a paper company that's never, ever been seen before. And you've managed to do it with this new work for Nina. And the image that is just haunting me is the image of the woman actually bursting through the paper. So you see her head and you see her hands, but you see three hands, not two. And it's magical. It's gorgeous. It's a little bit eerie. Talk about how you came up with that.
Well, I mean, the whole concept of for the swatch books was the golden means, you know, all the lines and rules and everything like that. But we really went off of a lot of the client's brief. You know,
what was the brief?
Well, I mean, it was for the linen paper line, which is sensible luxury, is what they call that. And so we really wanted to come up with an image, and we presented a lot of different concepts to them. But for that particular image, we wanted to do something with fashion and something that had paper into that shop in particular. And so it was more this idea of how do we put the emphasis on the beauty, but also still bring the idea of this sort of newness, freshness, this relaunch onto that in particular shot. And so I don't remember the designer that sketched off this like person poking their head through the paper, and we were like, yeah, that's kind of cool. I was like,
it's the new birth.
Yeah, it's like
the linen, classic
it's
linen.
It's just bizarro, and we were like, yeah, putting our hand in there.
Because the two is not enough,
right?
You know?
Right. Well, that the third hand, I think, is right. What really elevates it into right. That sort of like genius category. It's spectacular.
But yeah, our staff, you know, we really don't hold them back too much. Whenever we give them a project in the brief, you know, They come back with some interesting things from time to time. Sometimes I'm just like, where is this coming from?
It's great, though.
Yeah.
Like, we don't edit too much, you know.
The stuff we're doing everything
for the crazier, the better.
Yeah. We're doing everything for the one show this year. So you're going to see that in a couple weeks coming
wonderful.
Out. With some e-blasts and the posters getting ready to release. And I think when people see this, they're going to be kind of like, what the hell is going on here? It is really bizarro.
So you've also done some color renaming.
Yes.
For a color consumption project. You've come up with new names.
Every day.
Recent discoveries include Viking, pancakes, swamp. So what is the color for pancakes? Or what is the color that you renamed pancakes?
That's what Sophie had for breakfast one morning. So that's where pancakes come from that day. But no, the Color Consumption Project is something that we...
Where can people find this?
It's on our Facebook page. And we put a color up every day. And sometimes we go through a thematic week. Like since this was the Nina launch, all this past week, it was all classic colors. But lots of times it's what's going on in that time of year. Other times, you know, we do something around Fashion Week where we do all kind of fashion colors. But we really wanted to have something that people would want to come to our page every day and check it out. And just, it's fun.
You talked about your daughter, Sophie,
mm-hmm.
who is actually here with us, not in the studio, but on the floor here. She is a big part of your lives. You take her to all your photo shoots. One of the interesting quotes that I read, Poom, you saying about life and work versus family versus leisure time, et cetera. You said anyone who's looking for balancing work and life is probably not truly enjoying what they do. So tell me about that.
I think everybody have different things that make them happy. For me, it was very miserable try to answer that question that, oh, you know.
How do you do it all?
How do you do it all? Or, like, you really need to balance the work and the life. And, you know, I did try to do that, and it's made me really unhappy. And, you know, I feel, you know, feel like that's just not a good fit for me. And because I really enjoy design, I love design. I mean, it's like my second child. You know, it's everything, and it's okay to bring Sophie to a photo shoot. It's okay to go speak and bring her along with us.
I mean, think of what she's learning. It's amazing.
Yeah, she doesn't bother anyone, and like you say, you know, I think for a kid who's growing up with two designers' parents, it's okay for her to learn, and what a great opportunity. So we see that as a advantage, not disadvantage, and we just start blending everything together.
And so you've also blended in your real estate with your business. So you bought a building, mm-hmm. You've renovated that building, you're now working in that building. One of the buildings that you bought originally, you had rented out, now you're living there. Mm-hmm. So talk about how the real estate influences what you do and how you live.
I think originally it started out of boredom.
Really? What are you bored with?
Well, we, like I said, backtracking. Once we got married in Thailand, we came back and we bought a house and we were still working, saving money and stuff. And we're like, well, do we really need to have this much money in our bank account? And somehow or another, she got a Rich Dad, Poor Dad book somewhere. I don't know where the hell it came from. And she was toting it around for a couple of weeks. And
oh,
next thing I know is
so
like
awesome.
We're off house shopping and buying an investment property, which we bought. And, you know, I grew up in the country, so, you know, I know how to swing a hammer and take out walls and that kind of stuff. And I went to work on it in my spare time. And we were living in our other house. And then we found out that Sophie was coming along. And I was like, all right, got to hurry up and build this other one faster. And so we sold that house and moved to the other one and bought the office. And
that's a big sacrifice, yeah. We have to say, because bought the office, you know, I mean, that's a big investment.
Yes,
we have
it
to
is.
Talk
yeah.
to the bank. And but we thought, you know, we're going to build a company that's probably not a 50 people firm because we like to keep it small. I mean, we had done overseas 40 people company before with, you know, our previous job. So we know what is that like. And that's probably not the kind of agency we're going to be. So we bought smaller building and, you know, we know we're going to have space for 12 people and that's it.
Great.
And I get to pay myself rent, which is excellent.
That's wonderful. Well, I think that if people ask you about the name Design Army, I think that you should tell them that you're on a mission to change the world.
Definitely, we're on, I don't know about the world, Washington for sure right now, which I think we're actually getting to the point where it is starting to change. I don't know if we can be, you know, take credit for all of it, but I like to say that, you know, we definitely have changed a lot of organizations in the city. We've done a lot of work that's pretty high profile that people see. They drive by it every day. They don't know who's doing it half the time, but, you know, I think people are becoming more aware of it in the city.
I think you'd have to focus on what you do, you know, for New York, it's a great place, but for us, you know, it's good for us to be in D.C., and to be good, you have to be the best in your backyard first.
Well,
and aim for that.
You're certainly that. Thank you for coming on Design Matters, Jake and Poom. You can find out more about Design Army at www.designarmy.com. I'd like to thank you for listening, and remember, we can talk about making a difference, we could make a difference, or we can do both. I'm Debbie Millman, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Design Matters with Debbie Millman is recorded at the Masters in Branding Studio at the School of Visual Arts in New York City. It is produced by Curtis Fox Productions with technical assistance by Rainey Ortica and research by Jen Simon. The show is published exclusively by DesignObserver.com. You can subscribe to this free podcast in the iTunes Store.
You're growing a business, and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate, no coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.